Okay, so we continue with our series on Chuppah Kiddushin. We concluded last time with the process of going down or walking to the Chuppah, and we spoke about the Chuppah itself, where it comes from, its halachic definition, and we discussed the different views in reference to a chuppah being in doors as opposed to outdoors under the sky, and the question of a chuppah taking place in a Beit Knesset. The question there is more of a to what extent would it be seen as comparable to Christian weddings that are done usually in churches. From
That's
here,
question. How important is the Masada tradition?
I didn't follow what he said.
How important is it? Is it? Are you doing it in case something arises, or what's his necessary role?
You asking about the Masada Kiddushin, to what
Yeah,
extent it has to
he's
play?
asking in particular, how important is the Masada Kedushin?
It's important. It's very important, and it's not important at all. I mentioned that once before. Technically, the whole process could take place without any person with rabbinic background supervising or overseeing what is happening. As long as everything is done appropriately, then the Kiddushin and Nisuin take place, and there's no need for a rav. The problem is the knowledge and the verification that things are being done appropriately. Therefore, on the one hand, from the technical point of view, the marriage can take place without a Mesader Kiddushin, without a or a chuppah. From a practical point of view, definitely, I don't think that any official rabbinic body would recognize such a wedding without a Masada Kiddushin. At least, I mean, as they may see it l'chumra and require a get, but on the other hand, they won't accept it as proper Kiddushin because there are certain things that have to be verified and done properly. That again, without that knowledge, there is a wariness that things will not be done appropriately. So, on the one hand, from the formal side of things, there is no need for Masada Kiddushin. From the pragmatic, practical side, there is a requirement that there be Masada Kiddushin. And this is something that already goes back many, many generations, that weddings were officiated by someone who was. Okay. When we get to the chuppah, both the chatan and kala have come to the chuppah, there is a custom amongst Ashkenazic Jews that the kala usually accompanied with the mothers or whoever the shushvinim of the kala chatan were, the two women. Walk around the chatan. And here there are different customs, even as far as that. There are those who the custom is seven times, there are those who do it three times. This is mostly a issue of custom, symbolism, shivarakim, and all kinds of other aspects. It is not something that, if not done, would in any way prevent the kiddushin from taking place, and the fact is that certain communities don't even do it. I would not say that in a community that this is something that's accepted, then let's go just for no reason and refrain from doing it, because these procedures have evolved and developed their process. And I think we need, as a whole, mitzvah minhag, to respect those things. But should there be a problem with it? No, a kala who walking in circles like that would get dizzy or something of the sort, then it's clearly you have to be aware that this is something that is not critical, and the kiddushin is not contingent on it, and therefore I would tell such a kala, and you don't have to go in these circles around the chuppah. The only problem is that probably because of that, in the future he'll turn circles around her instead of the other way. But we'll have to turn life around a little. In any event, once this is completed, the chatan and kala stand usually before the public. The direction of standing is something that there is somewhat of a difference of opinion. Probably the more accepted or the more common minhag is that the kala stands to the right of the chatan, but there are those who hold, for different reasons, the opposite, and that the chatan should be to the right of the kala. In other words, the kala would be to the chatan's left. But the more commonly accepted is that the kala stands to the right, omedet mimino. She's there alongside him in the full sense, to his right. And again, this is the way it should be done. But as we see, there are other customs. Should somebody have gotten confused, and in no way will have any ramifications on the kiddushin being a proper kiddushin. Similarly, there is also an issue of what direction do the chatan and kala face. Ideally, according to, again, there are different views of this as well, but according to the common accepted custom, usually it's written that they face east, but east is a function of the fact that east was the direction towards Yerushalayim. And in reality, especially here in Eretz Yisrael, that becomes critical in the same way as in Tefillah. For example, if you were making a wedding here in Efrat, you wouldn't have the Chatan and Kala facing east. But on the contrary, you'd have them facing north, because the idea is facing Yerushalayim. And if they were up in Haifa, then you'd have them facing south towards Yerushalayim. So that the accepted custom is that the Chatan and Kala stand facing Yerushalayim. There are all kinds of discussions as to how the Masada Kedushin should stand, but I'll read you a paragraph that appears in the Sefer Nesvim Ki Yuchatam, and it says there, to what direction do those who say the bracha stand? Those who say the Birkat Erusin, and afterwards the Birkat Nesuin, the Shevah Bracha. In other words, they face east, east being Yerushalayim, similar to Chatan Kala. It's only in Sameach Kesameach does the one saying the bracha face the Chatan Kala. But again, this is not necessarily the common custom. And I think that most people would tell you that the ideal way is to have the Mesader Kiddushin facing the Chatan and Kala, the Mevarchim facing the Chatan and Kala, because the Bracha, though it's said, Klapei Shemaya, is said in reference to the Chatan and Kala and should relate to them as such. when we get to the actual kiddushin, and I remind you again what we've said and mentioned in the past, that there are two halachic processes that take place here. One is the kiddushin, which is called the erusin in the Talmudic sense of the word, not in modern Hebrew, and the nisuin. The first stage is the kiddushin. The critical components for the kiddushin are obviously a man and a woman who are interested in this process, two eidim, and what we would use today, a ring, but a halachically an object with which the kiddushin take place. Everything else is an envelope to it, but the kiddushin would take place, as I mentioned before, to Avi, if there was no Mesader Kiddushin. With two eidim, the Chatan Kala would do an act of kiddushin properly. With two eidim, then the kiddushin would be a proper kiddushin, even though there wasn't a Mesader Kiddushin. Even if the cup of wine wasn't there, the bracha wasn't said, still, the act of kiddushin would be a valid act of kiddushin. So that we have other aspects that envelope and give the halachic ideal structure of kiddushin, but the critical components of kiddushin are obviously a man and woman, an object used for the kiddushin, and two eidim. As far as this object, this ring used for kiddushin, first of all, we have to recognize that there is no explicit early source or requirement to use a ring. The Mishnah and the Gemara in the beginning of Kiddushin speak about three forms of creating Kiddushin. There are, first of all, three different procedures that could create, alternate procedures that could create the Kiddushin. One is money, monetary interaction. The other is a shtar, a deed that states the intent and the acceptance of the kiddushin. The third is having marital relations. Chazal, already in the Gemara, but definitely later than that, more or less pushed out the shtar and the bia as accepted forms of kiddushin, and modeled the process of kiddushin with an act of kiddushin of kesef. Kesef, the money necessary for kiddushin, needs to be worth a pruta. Pruta is the minimal monetary value that expresses some kind of financial interaction. And therefore, whether it's a coin or what's called in halacha a shvei pruta, something that has a value of a pruta, an object that has the value of that money, the minimal value necessary is a pruta. Therefore, that is clear in the Gemara that the act of kiddushin that is done through kesef requires a monetary value of at least a pruta, and which is not all that much. And the direction Chazal took was that the money should be the way with which we do the kiddush. You will not see any halachically, any proper halachic process of nisuin that has any other kind of kiddush. Matter of fact, I would assume you'd be hard pressed to find even an act of kiddushin that's not done with a ring. We'll speak about that in a moment. But definitely any other form of kiddushin other than kissing. However, there are opinions.
Can I ask a quick question? If it's shatterproof, it's not really worth much. Why bother? Why you set a limit? Why can't you just about?
Because even though it's not something that is large, there is always a certain point that you say that this has significance and less than that does not have significance. And since the process of the kiddushin requires the mindset of the chatan to desire and commit himself to this kiddushin, and the mindset of the kala to agree and accept and enter to this kiddushin, create that mindset needs something that has that minimalistic significance. And therefore, Chazal required that the kiddushin of Kesef be done with what was categorized as a minimalistic sum for interactions, a pruta.
How much is a pruta in today's values?
Don't remember exactly, but it's not a lot. It really...
it's not a penny. It's like a penny, like we think of a penny.
It's a little more than a penny, but let's put it this way. Any ring you would buy, the cheapest of rings you would buy in a store, you know, in a jewelry store or something, would be worth more than a pruta. Yeah, I don't remember the exact sum, and therefore, when you see an object of any kind of value, it'll be more than a pruta. I think if I remember right, if a pruta today is something value of a few shekels, it really is not something of any major significance. I'll try to look it up and see what the if I can find out exactly what the
my point is, if it's really not worth anything, so why bother saying
it's worth
pruta?
It's a legal aspect. Okay, it's a legal aspect, legal halachic aspect that comes and says there has to be a minimal sum that is seen as something that represents serious interaction. And less than that is not conceived as something that people will see in a serious manner and therefore commit to it. So therefore, the requirement is that on that legal level, we use a pruta. You want to make it more respectful and serious? Yeah, invest a little more money in the ring of the object that's being used. But as far as a legal requirement, it requires the equivalent of a minimalistic financial interaction.
A pruta is worth 8 cents.
Right? Pruta is eight cents?
Yeah. Because 256 prutot equal one biblical shekel, which is about $20 in modern currency. So if you go backwards, it's about 8 cents.
Okay. I thought it was a little more than that, but that again, the point was that with that money, you could do a minimal interaction. Which is interesting. That's why I'm surprised 8 cents, because I don't know if you really can buy today almost anything with 8 cents. But I don't know, maybe a candy in a candy store you can still get for a dime. In any case, that's the basis of it. It's a legal standard of minimal financial interaction. But as I was saying, there is one thing, even though we don't use other forms of kiddushin, there is one thing to take keep in mind. There are opinions that the ketuvah can serve as a bedieved form of kiddushin. In other words, we said that there is a possibility of creating kiddushin with shtar. What a shtar kiddushin has to state is that I, Tony Almoni, am interested in asking to be mekadesh you, Unta Amunta. Okay? And that, or those components, exist, according to some opinions, in the ketubah. Because the names are there. And the Edim come and say, Amar la heavenly le'intu, be my wife, which is an acceptable form or expression for kiddushi. Our opinions, therefore, that the handing over of the ketubah should be done in such a way, aiding and so on, so that it could function, if necessary, as kiddushin as well, not just as the ketubah and the commitment of the ketubah, but as kiddushin as well, the giving over of the ketubah as an act of kiddushin. So should there have been any fault or problem in the kiddushin, the keset, then the kiddushin would still be valid because of kiddushei shtar. But again, that's not everybody's opinion, and we definitely don't do that as a mechila. But that's the only remnant you might find in a modern day wedding to the alternate path of kiddushin of shtar. As I said, the accepted form is to use kesef. In the time of the Gemara, there is no specific mention of any sort of preference to money or to another object. And it really seems that a person can actually give coins, give some other object that he has, or even other expressions of benefits that a person does for the woman that might constitute a kiddushin, as long as she received something in this way. The evolvement of the process of kiddushin throughout the generations, it became accepted, and to the best of my knowledge, it's the accepted, at least today, the accepted form of kiddushin throughout Am Yisrael to use a ring. We find an explicit mention of using a ring in the Ramah, in Siman Chafzai. The Shulchan Aruch does not mention it, but there is no indication that there's an argument with that. He just doesn't mention that that should be. And the Ramah already comes and says that the accepted form of kiddushin should be using a ring. Why a ring? Here there are two directions. One is more Kabbalistic. There are all kind of Kabbalistic symbolisms given to it in the Zohar, the Kutei Zohar, and that. And the other, more pragmatic, that is found in the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch says the idea of the Kiddushin is an expression of commitment from here on, absolute commitment. In other words, the woman comes and says, I'm basically committing myself to you, and I will not prohibit it from committing myself to any other person. Most other objects, if given, would be something that the woman would either use up. The person gave her a loaf of bread. Loaf of bread is definitely more worth more than 8 cents. And therefore, technically, he could be mekadesh her with a loaf of bread. But over a short period of time, she would either eat it or it would get moldy and get thrown out. It wouldn't exist. The ring, on the other hand, is something that will exist, go on with her, and it's also something she can wear on her hand, and as such, function is sort of a reminder of her commitment, absolute commitment to her husband and not to other people. Interestingly, today, marriage rings or wedding rings really have become sort of symbolic of the idea. And we have all these stories of, you know, the people who take off their rings so that others would not know that they're married. And on the other hand, the custom of men wearing marriage rings as well to sort of declare the fact that they're married. So that obviously, what the Sefer HaChinuch is mentioning or saying here has psychologically, at least, deep roots in human attitudes and human thinking. Historically, as I said, it's not 100% clear when the use of a ring as the object of Kiddushin became prevalent. There are all sorts of indications to the use of rings already in earlier times. First of all, those who associate the Zohar to Shimon Bar Yochai. Right? So we mentioned that we spoke about the literature, the Torah Shabbat literature, that there's obviously a big dispute as to the identity of the author of the Zohar, because it only suddenly appears in the middle of the Rishonic period. But if tradition that the Zohar was written by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is accepted, so then we find that the concept or the idea of using a ring can be dated back already to the Tanaic period, at least of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But as I said, besides that, definitely in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, rings are not mentioned. We find Gaonim speak of this custom that already is like a predated custom, usually, interestingly, related to Eretz Yisrael. Again, that fits in nicely. Those who identify the Zohar with Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was in Eretz Yisrael. And there seems to have been at least a period of time in which a ring was used in Eretz Yisrael, but was not necessarily used in Bavel. In the Gaonic period already, we find more and more a mention of the use of a ring. And as we proceed into the Rishonic period, it becomes something that is a norm, though you will not find, not in the Rif, not in the Rambam, not even in the Shulchan Aruch, is the line of moving from Rishonim to Achronim, an explicit mention of using a ring, but other Rishonim do mention the idea that the custom is to use a ring for kiddushin. Tell you if a person used some other object. Certainly, if they used some other simple, you understand in a minute why simple, piece of jewelry, a bangle, right, a wrist bangle, and gave that instead of a ring. I can't tell you how the Rabbanut would respond to that. Because it's deviating from the accepted custom, and therefore can also raise other questions as to how the Masadic Kiddushin or those involved, how they acted halachically. But on a technically formal halachic level, if a person came and said, "Hareat met kudeshet li be," the nesens, right, a nose ring. if it's shvei pruta, she would be mekudeshet. How the rabbanut here in Israel would respond to it would be an interesting thing to see, because they definitely would not like that deviation and would raise, as I said, questions as to what other deviations may have taken place. But on the other hand, I think that they would not allow such a woman to marry somebody else without a gift. In reference to the ring, the most accepted ring is simple gold. In some communities, silver was used, a simple gold or silver ring. Certainly, we refrain from using rings that have a stone in it. And that's always, you'll see the difference between an engagement ring and a marriage ring. Right? The engagement ring is usually a stone, a diamond with all the ideas and things that are connected to it, while the wedding ring is a simple gold ring. Again, some use silver. Today, there are those who like to use white gold. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. Gold is mentioned in some of the sources as such, but that's not in any way Mahakei the Kiddushin. As I said, some communities used silver as well. What should not be used is a gold-plated or gold or silver-plated ring. Because okay? There, you enter questions, and we'll discuss that in a second, in a broader sense, you enter questions as far as identifying the value of the pruta or what the value of the pruta really is. If you have a gold plated ring, right? The average person who looks at it sees gold. That's it on a certain level, but in reality, it's worth less. And therefore, there can be an element of deception. The woman might think she's getting something of greater value and accordingly agree to get married. Were she to discover that it was worth less, she may have said no. Therefore, to avoid such problems, one should not use a ring that is gold or silver plated. It should be purely gold. In some communities, also silver is used.
I have a question to ask.
Yes.
Okay. It doesn't say any place that you have to give them a wedding ring. You got to give her something that's worth a dinner. That's all.
As I said, you're right, Irving. In the Gemara, it's not mentioned. We find mention of it more in the sense of that this is the accepted custom in Geonim and later. In the Ramah, it already appears as almost a requirement. But you're absolutely right that as far as the sources, definitely the Gemara, it does not appear at all. And that's why I said that should a different object have been used for Kiddushin, one would be hard-pressed to say that the Kiddushin did not apply. Right? The only way they could try to play is in redefining Kedat Moshe Yisrael. Otherwise, they would be hard-pressed to do so. As I said, the Rabbanut would cause somebody who did that a lot of headaches, because they'd be wary of other halachas. But you're right that technically, Kiddushin would take place if you gave her a fork that's worth approving. Or if you gave her a coin, right? You gave her a coin, a silver dollar, she'd be Mekudesh. In this, or for the same reasons that I mentioned, the issue of gold-plated or gold or silver-plated, we don't use rings that have a stone. What is the problem in using a ring that has a stone? A ring that has a stone is, again, something that needs a more professional assessment of value. It's technically a gold ring, a simple gold ring. You could calculate more or less its value, take a scale, put it on the scale, see its weight, look up what the value of gold is, and you know what the value of this ring is. Plus minus. If you have a stone, here there are several things that have to be assessed. First of all, gems need greater assessment, what the different gems are worth and what their value is. But more than that, there is also the placement of the stone onto the ring, which requires a professional who knows how to do this. Consequently, changing the value, which leaves us with an object that the assessment of its value is problematic and difficult. And therefore, halachically, one should not use a ring that has a stone. An in-between state, and here there are a lot of discussions, and it comes down to, in many cases, the assessment of the Masada Kedushin. If the ring is not a simple gold band, but has etchings on it, has some kind of design built into the ring. One hand, the more of the design of the etching that's built into the ring, the more the value of the ring is determined not by its value of amount of gold, but by the professionalism of the craftsman and the craft that was done here. Therefore, leaving us with a question of how to assess its value and making this object a more problematic object as far as kiddushin. If it's simple etchings, then the tendency of most Masadrei Kiddushin would be to see it still as its core value is the value of the gold as such, and to be able to ignore the slight etchings that are included on this ring. So as I said, in many cases, the specific level is something that is an assessment acceptability, and you might find different people, Masadrei Kiddushin, who would draw the line at different points, and therefore I think it's important that the Chatam and Kala, especially if it's not a simple gold band, we show a picture of the ring to the Masada Kiddushin to verify in advance that this is acceptable for the purpose of the Kiddushin. Similarly, also, there are those who have reservations of having, because again, it requires craftsmanship, writing on the ring. And those who like to have the name of the kala or some kind of something on the ring. It's preferable to do the kiddushin without it, and then take it back to a jeweler who would put in the name. Once the kiddushin has been done, the kala can do with this ring whatever she wants. She could theoretically sell it, right, and then say goodbye. Therefore, there would be no problem at a later point in putting in any kind of design or any kind of names or wording on the ring. So preferably the kiddushin should be done with a simple ring, and if people want something on it, it should be added in after the wedding itself. Something I saw when I was sort of looking through things, something I had never seen before, in reference to a ring and its sources, one of the Rishonim brings down an interesting custom. At that point, at least in his community, obviously, the kiddushin were not done just with a ring. What they would have is a wine cup with wine, and at the bottom of the cup, a ring. And the chatan would say to the kala, you are mekudeshet with this cup and the content of what's in it. Okay? The content is the wine, and what would be in the bottom is the ring. In other words, the actual kiddushin was not only the ring, but there was an idea of giving a ring, which, again, may connect either to the Kabbalistic symbolism of it or the idea of the Minchat Chinuch, the Sefer Chinuch is in the Sefer Chinuch, of the woman continuing to wear it afterwards as a statement of commitment. That's an interesting sort of in-between kind of thing, that the ring accompanied was part of it, but the Kiddushin was not done just with a ring.
Isn't that problematic because she has to fish it out, or someone has to fish it out of the wine to put on her? Or, I mean, are they drinking from this cup? Are they using this cup? Was the Masada Kedushin using this cup?
Okay. So, my understanding of that custom was that this cup was also used for the bruch. Okay.
So, the problem is ownership then. Because it's being passed around. How do the Edom know who owns this?
So they can ask. How do you know that the, and we'll get to that in a moment, but how do we know that the man owns this ring? You have to ask them.
They have Edom evaluate the ring. He's asked the question, did you buy this with your own money, et cetera, et cetera.
Is this your cup, your wine? And everything that's in it. Here.
Yeah, but the problem is when you're passing it around for brachot, you're right. Giving the person, is it like an etrog where you're giving them ownership?
No.
How do you know?
I'm the chatan, okay? I'm not giving you ownership. Like, I'm giving you permission to make a bracha with the, you don't have to, in the etrog, there's a halacha of lachem. It has to be yours. Here, there's no halacha of lachem for Masada Kiddushin. Masada Kiddushin just, for technical reasons, says the bracha.
Okay. But when does she get the ring? This is what I'm trying to understand.
The ring, when he hands her the cup. When he says, Harat mekudeshet li, because ze umashe bet yofo, he hands her the cup. If they drank a little bit off of it beforehand, so umashe bet yofo is a little less. If they didn't drink it, right, he's giving her a cup with a ring in it, maybe wine and a ring, and she can fish out the ring whatever she wants. She received, and what she knows is there's a cup here, there's wine, and there's a ring. And that's the assessment of the shvetim. Again, it's a custom that existed. I can only second guess that it was a custom that evolved.
It sounds like someone must have made a mistake and dropped the ring in the cup once, and everyone says, "Oh, new minhag." Minhag of the week.
I think simply there are indications that in Bavel there was reservation. For whatever reason, there was reservations from using the ring. It could be that this was sort of a compromise, at least in certain communities. They used something else for the kiddushin, but included the ring because of the aspects that were brought in, Kabbalistic or otherwise, in the ring. That would be my guess of how it evolved, but I don't know. It could be, yes. It could be that the one time it fell in, somebody said, hey, that's a really nice idea. Now, look at the cup with me. In any case, it just shows that the idea was to show that...
And the other confusion is using two cups at the chuppah. You can get confused which cup is which.
Okay, so you have to be a little bit more careful. okay, so that's the halacha of the ring. When we have to note here, and came up in the discussion that I just had with Arthur, the ring has to be ownership of the chatan. For it to be a proper kiddushin, he has to have full ownership of it. That means that preferably he buy the ring with his own money. Technically, the person who doesn't have money is still dependent on his parents. Right? His parents could buy the ring and then make an actual act of kinyan to give over the ring to the chatan. But you have to not assume, oh yeah, it's for you. No, you have to make an act of kinyan so that on all standards, halachically, the ring belongs to the chatan. Also, there are those who are very particular that the ring be paid either in cash, or if using a credit card, be bought in advance in such a way that the ring has been paid for already. Because if not, something that I acquired with a credit card, that would raise a question as to the full ownership, the proper ownership that I have on that ring. Because I owe the money for it. And the question is, if I haven't paid the money, do I owe it? Now, I'm not saying that one could not find halachic legitimacy to say that even if it hasn't been paid for credit-wise, it would still be his completely. Because halachically, an act of kinyan is when he picked it up, when he went to the store and he picked it up and took it. That is an now he just owes money. As long as there's no statement that should he not pay up his bill, then the ring would be taken back, then technically halachically you could get away with it. But
can he use his parents' credit card?
Even if I have parents' credit card, even parents pay cash, I said we'd have to do an act of Kenya. Parents' credit card would definitely be more. And therefore, one should be very particular, and here's, for Avi's sake, right, here's an example of one of the things that the importance of having the Sadeh Kiddushin, who can really verify and make sure that the ownership is a proper ownership. I remember at one particular wedding, the father bought the ring for the son, and he said, yeah, I gave it to him. I said, you know what, gave it to him, and probably your intention was to give him the matana, and he received it, and he owns it. Let's do something proper, right? And make a proper key. Because right? There, you verify that it's really his. The act of pushing is valid. So otherwise, you'd start getting into questions of the validity of the act of mediation. Okay, any questions in reference to what we spoke about here in the connection of the ring used in the Kiddushin?
Okay. Pretty clear.
Okay.
Yitzchak used a nose ring?
I don't know what Yitzchak used. If he did a formal act of Kiddushin, he gives her, but the question is, defining it, addressing it, talk about that's Kiddushin. But there's also talks about Tabaot. Those who want to associate the idea of Tabaot already going back to the Avot, but I think that's pushing it a bit. I don't know. I can't tell you. I wasn't present at the I can't tell you what he used for the Kiddush.
Is the reading of the Ketubah necessary? That's just off topic a little bit.
The answer is yes and no. Isn't everything else? No. Yes. Because it serves a certain purpose. No, because it would not in any way hamper the actual existence. And the reading of the Ketubah, or the main reason for reading the Ketubah, could be circumvented through some other form. Okay, I'm going to end here. I'll give you a few minutes till your next shiur. And we'll continue next time with the Adim and the process, the actual process of the Kiddush.
Toda Rabba.
Thank you. Okay.
Have a good week and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.